Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
We are joined today by Harry, the host of The Messenger, the Rachel Cancer Scam podcast. Harry, thanks for joining us today. Podcast is still pretty new, but already enthralled with it. So thanks for coming.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's a, you know, it is brand new. We're just, at this point, it's, probably three episodes. Two are out now. The next one comes out this week. So every Thursday. I appreciate you having me on too. Thank you.
Yeah. So Harry, we've done a lot of interviews. We've talked to people who have investigated cases, sometimes people who are involved, but I'm going to be honest with you. I don't even know where to start with this story. It's very personal to you, obviously, but you're telling it in a great narrative way of, I mean, just what it sounds like. You were scammed. So I guess give us an overview of how it started and how you ended up where you are.
There's no, it's funny as I think about it. And I think like in general, I think I'm a fair storyteller. If I were to sit and talk to some people and say, hey, listen, let me tell you a story about this or that. Generally, I'm a fair storyteller. This story, it's impossible to sit for a minute or two and explain to somebody what happened. I mean, it really is a ridiculous tale. The shortest, most abridged version is that I met Rachel in the spring of 2001 after I moved from the East Coast to Vegas. I went on a trip. I flew to Houston. I'm not proud of this, but I found her. She was working as an escort. At the time, it's like that movie Heat, with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, where, at one point De Niro says, you do not have anything in your life you can't walk away from in, in 15 minutes flat. Like that, that was me. I was single. I saw her in a bar. It was one of those things that you would normally see like in Vegas. She was absolutely the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. And I thought, well, yeah, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
So we end up connecting that way. And then, I remember feeling like she is just the sweetest person I've ever met. Like, how is she doing this kind of work? And I get that they call it a trick when women do that for a reason, but she was just the sweetest person I had ever met. And then she gave me her actual phone number and gave me her name. And then I saw her a bunch after that. And that was the end of our relationship. She introduced herself to me that day, however, as Madison.
Okay.
And Madison is the name that she gave her firstborn daughter that was born about four and a half years after that. So that comes out in the story, right? Mm-hmm. Madison ends up finding out that Rachel named her after her stripper or escort name.
Wow.
And I refer to her on the podcast. I'm not sure how far along you are, but I refer to her as the daughter formerly known as Madison, because now Madison doesn't want anything to do with that name. She's changed her name.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah. So we met 2001. We connected, for a year, year and a half. She ended up getting married. I ended up getting married. And then at some point when my first marriage was breaking up, I went out searching for her. It was early days of social media. And I found her. And, at one point she said, what are you looking for? And I thought, I'm not looking for the relationship that we had the first time that we met. I guess I'm just looking for happiness. Like, I'm looking for, to find something that's going to work for me. And almost immediately, she began to plant the seeds. Within 6 months of that, she claimed that her husband had beaten her up badly. There were stories of her. One story in particular that I will talk about, where she claims that she was beaten up so badly that when she went to the hospital and they, they fixed her up, they took blood work and they found cancer. Well, this was like 2012 or 2013, she was setting me up for this cancer scam. She never had cancer. The husband never beat her up. She told me at that time that her husband left her. So as we're sitting here now, 10 years, 12 years prior to where we are right now, she laid the groundwork for, I'm divorced from my husband and I had cancer.
Yeah.
The first time. And then over the years, we saw each other. Never boyfriend, girlfriend. There was always this emotional kind of connection between the two of us. And then I got married again. And at some point, she and I, after that marriage ended, she and I connected. And I started to realize that this emotional connection, at least on my side, was something that was really powerful. And I dropped a bomb on her in 2021 after we actually had a real date, like out to dinner. You know, I flew to see her. It was a big deal after 20 years of knowing each other. And that's where she started to drop the bomb about, you know, I'm a lawyer and I'm working on this, you know, famous, you guys are crime TV or crime guys, the Kristen Smart case and Slow. Well, she claimed that she was asked to be on that case by the district attorney. And at that point, she was a real estate attorney, she had told me, and, you know, had passed the bar and, you know, all this stuff. But every bit of it, she just began to lay this groundwork for elaborate lies. It was the most ridiculous thing. And what she was doing, I realized, is she was just pulling me into her web, you know, deeper and deeper. And after that first date, probably a month and a half after that, I said, you know, I can't get you out of my head. We need to figure out how to do this. You know, if proximity wasn't an issue, could we do this? And she never expected me to say, I want you to be my girl. Mm-hmm. And that's when she panicked. That's when she brought her cancer back. That's when, you know, she started talking about her daughter's mental health. And I said, listen, you know, I just want to be with you. That's all I know. And at one point, the lie that really did her in was she said, I'm pregnant, and she sent me an ultrasound. Perfect date. You know, the date of birth of the baby was the day after her actual birthday on August 21st. And at that point, she told me her cancer was back and she was pregnant on the same day. And the next day, I literally said, I'm coming up there. I'm packing a bag. I'm going to have someone watch my dog. And I want to be there if you need me. I realize I can't come to your house right now because your girls don't know me. And I thought she had gotten married a second time. All this will come out in the podcast. But I thought I'm going to uproot my life and I'm going to California. And that's what I did. And she kept me thinking that she was single. She was an attorney. She was, you know, all of these things. And she was pregnant. And I'm, you know, at the time I'm 56 years old. I never had kids of my own. I thought, what are we going to do? Maybe this is a sign somehow that, you know, from above, you know, I'm not a religious guy, but why would this happen to us at this point now? And then I think she realized I wasn't going anywhere. I'm not the kind of guy to just leave a girl that's pregnant with my baby and sick with cancer. So I began to dig my heels in. And in return, she had to create all of these lies, which ended with her going to the hospital. And then her way of keeping me away from her at the hospital was to say, I have no immune system and I'm in protective isolation. So I literally sat here where I'm sitting right now for 18 months, 563 days, being her virtual caregiver. Wow. She would send me a text. I would respond with a video. I would play my guitar for her. I would, you know, I would read. She's a voracious reader. So I would, and I do some voice work. So I would sit and I would read her a book. It's exhausting to read a book, not just read a book, which I hate to read. But, you know, when you read a book for someone, you know, it's, you know, I read Grapes of Wrath. I looked at it the other day. I've got 17 hours of my voice.
Yeah.
On Grapes of Wrath. It was exhausting as hell, but this is what I did for her. And I was in hook, line, and sinker. And the whole time she was living her life, never had cancer. There was never any of the stuff with her daughter's mental health. Everything was a lie. And she did it for attention. Yeah. I have a text message her husband sent where she said, I lied to Harry for attention. Imagine that. Imagine how crazy your life has to be that you lie to someone about cancer. And as soon as you start, as soon as that fake cancer piece of it comes out, it has elevated this podcast beyond anything I could ever dream of, because now I have people, I have cancer support groups that are out for blood, Right. You don't screw. It's like lying about your military service. You just don't, because there are people that will track you down and, you know, not really torture you, but they'll find you and they'll make your life miserable. And that's what these people, especially in her community, it's been really difficult.
Yeah. And
so that's the abridged story.
So how did you, and I don't want to give anything away from your podcast, because I think it's important for people to go listen, but how did you start to piece together some of these lies? Like, how did you start to figure out this is not what she's saying it is?
There, you know, in every scam, and I know you guys see this, but in every scam, there are red flags along the way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't want to believe them. And there were a couple of red flags, but one of the big ones is that my friend Billy Bush tried to get Rachel out of Mexico. Rachel was on a trip to Mexico before even the hospital stay. And she got COVID and she was pregnant and she miscarried. She made up this whole series of events while she was in Mexico. So I thought, and at that point, you couldn't come back into the U.S. in 2021 if you had COVID, right? They would keep you out. So I called Billy and I said, listen, I need to get her out of there. She's, you know, she's pregnant and she's sick and I'm worried about her. And he said, oh, my God, of course. And he said, where is she staying? And I said, Moon Palace in Cancun. And he said, holy shit, I know the two guys that own that place. So he calls one of his buddies. And then he called me back and he said, your girl's not there. He said, there's no way she's not there. He said, I just talked to one of the two owners and she's not there. And then I texted her and I said, listen, Billy's trying to get you out. He says, you're not there. And she had a lie for that, right? She said, well, you know, when you're sick and you have, you know, COVID or whatever, they have a special wing, they have a special group of rooms. And that's where they put me. And I'm not listed as a guest. And I thought, you know, at that point, I thought she had COVID. Yeah. I thought she had miscarried and lost our baby. Like, I don't want to start a fight, but, you know, I was on another guy's podcast, up and Adam in Slow. And I remember saying to Adam at one point, I should have listened to Billy Bush. And that's a great clip on our social media. Yeah. I'm just sitting there with my head down thinking, I should have listened to Billy Bush. And he was kind enough to lend his name and to serve as executive producer for this, you know, as well. But that's one of the red flags. There were a bunch of other red flags along the way, but I really didn't think that I was being lied to until the day I found out that I was being lied to. Yeah. I didn't want to believe it. I wanted to believe that, you know, after 58 years, I was finally present in a relationship. I was with someone that I was meant to be with. And when I found out, the best way I can explain it to you is that after I found out and I realized that I had to figure out what I was going to do. Am I just going to say, screw you and not communicate with you? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to try to get some answers and try to find out what happened? Like, why would you, you know, the investigator in me that should have come out months before that went into high gear. But I had to say to people in my life who found it nearly impossible by that point, because it was 18 months of me sitting here at home, alienating every person in my life. And I'll touch on that for you because it's important, but I literally didn't want to leave my house. Mm-hmm. I would go, I've got a place where I go and I sit and I smoke cigars. I would walk into that place and I could literally suck the energy out of that room by just walking in. I thought my girl was dying. Mm-hmm. I thought my life was over. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to cope. So I ruined every relationship in my life in a way. I had guys that loved me and were important people in my life that just didn't know how to deal with me. I remember at one point, a buddy of mine said, listen, you don't have a monopoly on sadness. You don't. You need to get over it and get your shit together and live your life. And deal with whatever gets thrown at you. So after I found out, I literally went to all of these friends and I said, she's sick. She's got this memory loss issue. And it's too much at this point. I just have to walk away. So I turned around and I lied.
Yeah.
Cause I was so embarrassed. And then I started to write this story and I thought, what am I going to do with it? And when I started writing this 8 months ago, it wasn't a big deal. But the night before the podcast came out, which was the 10th of October was the release date. The night of the 9th, I sat here and I'm not a big drinker, but I sat here with a big glass of scotch and a Padron. And I thought, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I'm going to expose my story to the world. I'm going to look like an idiot. Like, I fell for these outrageous lies. And, you know, I had a moment of panic where there's no rewind. Like, I want to rewind so I never asked her to marry me and never found out that she was fake pregnant or fake cancer. Never mind the podcast now. Yeah. So it's like insult to injury. But, you know, I've learned that this is a cautionary tale for people. The one thing that I have really gotten in touch with, because especially on Instagram and her community, is the people that have been scammed and the people that scam about cancer. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm a crime TV junkie. I'm like you guys. Like, I don't see a show that, you know, that has a murder, that has, you know, someone that is missing and is never found, or someone that's scammed, that I don't stop and watch and go, it's a crazy story.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to all of it. And then it's just like what you see on the shows. You always see it and it never happens to you until it does.
Yeah.
Now I'm the guy. When I didn't even tell Billy Bush until I recorded the first episode and I sent him the episode. He's got like ADD. And I said, do me a favor, just sit and listen to it. And he gets 5 minutes into it. And he sends me a text. I still have it. It says, oh my God, you're the guy that got scammed on Dateline. Oh. I said, yeah, I'm that guy. You know, I'm that guy. But that's how it went down. So I'm happy to answer any questions or elaborate on anything. I know it's, you know, I should have looked at my watch, but I guarantee you that was about 7 minutes of me running my mouth.
No, it's so, it's funny. You mentioned Billy has ADD. I don't know if you're joking. I do also have it. And I listened to the trailer the other day and I think it's only like 2 or 3 minutes. The first 30 seconds, there's so much. I just had to hit pause and take notes. Like, my God, this happened and this happened. And I'm like, I've only listened to like an eighth of this trailer and so much has happened already. So it's insane.
When I recorded the first episode, it was 40 minutes. It was actually what became episode one and part of episode two, because I realized after letting it sit for a while and asking a couple of people to listen to it, there's so much.
Yeah.
Like, she never lied to me about being an airline pilot. She lied to Girls at Work. She never lied about being a trauma nurse for Mercy Air to me. She did that at work. So some of these lies she told me, others she told other people. But the crazy thing that happened is there's this community of people that she's touched and scammed with her lies, and they've turned against her, and they've become a source of information for me to curate this story. It's no longer my story, right? The reason I call this The Messenger is that I'm not just sharing my story and advocating for myself. I'm advocating for every single person that she touched and she hurt, including her daughters, who will never want me to be their advocate. Yeah. But I advocate for her soon to be ex-husband. I advocate for her 19-year-old daughter who is stuck with a name or was stuck with a name that she used as a stripper. I'm advocating for her mom and her sister, who I have a relationship with, her first husband from 25 years ago. Like, anyone that she's touched, I'm a voice for, and I'll share everybody's story. That's, you know, that's it. But there's so much information. It's like you said, you listen to an eighth of it and you had to stop and take a breath.
Well, even in the last 3 minutes, you've mentioned lying about being a pilot, lying about being a trauma nurse. The memory loss piece is something that I don't think you've gone into in depth yet in the podcast. No. So there are just so many layers to this.
It's a real life, which Catch Me If You Can, the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio. Right. It's a real life case.
That ran through my head.
This is a female version of that. This is an odd. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, someone on social media said, this is like Catch Me If You Can. It's funny that you said that, because I just saw that comment the other day. But you're right. I mean, this is one crazy thing after another. And you want to know what's insane, by the way, when she, we're not the only crime TV junkies.
Yeah.
When she was allegedly in the hospital, I gave her access to my Netflix and my Hulu and something else. And I would go in periodically just to see what she was watching to keep herself busy. She's watching Dirty John and Inventing Anna and, you know, the poker movie with Jessica Chastain movie, which I love. Jessica's Game.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? Is that what the name of it is? It's Jessica Chastain. Molly's Game.
Yes, Molly's Game. That's it.
She's watching all of this scam stuff and she was addicted to it. But she was, when I went back and watched Dirty John like 2 months ago and I wanted to throw up. I thought, oh my God, she was using my Netflix and my Hulu to set the groundwork for this. It's ridiculous. And you're right. I mean, these stories and stuff that happened to the girls at the airport and the memory loss piece of it. There's a part of this, and I hate admitting this. It's, and I don't know if this happens to other people that do these podcasts, but obviously season one is complete. I've at least written the first five episodes of season two. And I'm realizing as I'm writing it, I've got at least one more, if not two more seasons. I haven't brought the doctor in. I haven't brought the hospital stay or any of that stuff that happened. And the memory loss, you know, I want to touch on it for a minute because I think it's important to what I went through. I'm going to have to do this. I may not take your questions on this. I may just kind of give you a little taste of it. But at one point, she had indicated that the doctor who was in charge of her cancer said that the scan showed three tumors, one in her intestines, one in her throat, and one in her brain. Well, the brain tumor ended up allegedly having to be operated on. She needed multiple surgeries to do that because it grew back. She had seizures. She had all this, all these complications. But at one point she woke up from one of these surgeries and she said to me, Harry? And I said, yeah. She said, how are you? And I said, I'm fine. I'm glad to be hearing from you. How are you? And she said, I'm okay. And I said, do you have some time to chat? And she said, well, I'm not home at the moment, but, and I thought, what? She pretended that she woke up with memory loss.
Huh.
By the way, that's the last part of the story before I found out she was getting scammed. She kept in that state for over 5 months. And she would say, I don't understand why you're texting me every single day and why I have all these pictures of you on my phone. And I said, you want to know what's even crazier? Look down at your left hand. And she said, okay. And I said, you see the ring on your finger? I said, you know who gave that to you? She said, no. And I sent her a picture of a photo album I have with 40 pictures of that ring. She used to send them to me all the time.
Yeah.
So she pretended to not remember who I was. So every day this story got worse. The story gets worse. Like if you think you're annoyed now or you're having a tough time following, like anyone that's upset about the cancer scam, as you go along, you're going to be out of your mind. You know, it's a ridiculous tale. But I have everything backed up in my phone.
Yeah.
Right. Everything, because she was in the hospital and she had this feeding tube. We had to go to text. We were never on the phone. That has come back to bite her on the ass.
Right.
Because I have, if she were to try to sue me, the only defense for slander or libel is something called absolute truth. Right. And I have everything in my phone. Everything is backed up. Double backed up,
Yeah. And that's
so why she can't have my phone hacked.
Yeah. I really, it was even further drawn into the first couple episodes when you would say, this is an actual text that I have from Rachel. When you're mm-hmm. telling that story, you mentioned that she wanted attention from you, that she was lying to the girls from work because she was essentially getting them to cover her so she wouldn't lose her job. Do you know any other motivations of, like, did she have any other types of financial gain from these scams she was running?
That's generally the common theme with these. There's some sort of a ruse for the legal tender or property or something along right. those lines. She wanted attention. Yeah. Like, I gave her money. I gave her like a few thousand bucks. She had my engagement ring, but she wasn't running away and, you know, building a home and a ranch in Montana with the few thousand bucks I gave her. It was attention. It's always been attention seeking behavior. What I've learned is that since she was a young girl, her father died in an awful refinery fire when she was 9. But after that point in time, the wheels came off and she just needed to seek the attention of men. And, you know, she's been married. She's still at the moment, she's still married to her husband, Mark, and for the entire relationship. You know, I've found a half a dozen or more men that she was involved with, and not just for short periods of time, for long periods of time. It is attention seeking behavior. That's what it is. At one point I sent the podcast to a mental health professional friend of mine, and she's a Boston person like me. I've just been fortunate enough to lose that unfortunate accent. But when I sent it to her, I said, hey, I want you to come on the show and talk about the narcissist. And she got back on the phone with me. She said, I'm happy to talk about the narcissist, but you need to understand this is a very dangerous woman. This is sociopathic and pathological behavior. And I, you know, as I said to Adam, you know, I'm like, wait a minute, I got to be afraid of her. Like, you know, I'm 6'1", I'm 240 pounds. I've been in martial arts most of my adult life. I'm not afraid of some cute little blonde beauty queen. And she said, she's a dangerous person.
Yeah.
Mark my words, she's a dangerous person. So, you know, I don't know, beyond it just being attention seeking, it's a serious mental health problem. She needs to get help. As much as I want to share my story, I'm also very careful to not disparage her. Right. To not, you know, I don't even like saying this, but it's not like, you know, I'm on the podcast going, this lying bitch needs to be put in her place. You know what I mean? I don't ever talk like that. I had the opportunity to say whatever I wanted to her after I found out. And I never even raised my voice at her. And trust me, when I'm pissed, I can raise my voice, but I was pretty calm. I don't want to disparage her. I think she's got a mental illness, but at the same time, she's continuing to scam people. And that pisses me off. She's lying to the airport and then she plays the victim, right? She think about this for a second. She passed out a fake pilot's license. She literally went to the internet, got a pilot certificate, photoshopped her name and the date of issue into it. And then she passed it around at an airport. She works for a major US air carrier. So when I heard that story that she was pretending to be a pilot, I wrote to the CEO of the airline. And then I went online and I looked at his org chart for the 10 or 12 people beneath him in the company. And I copied 10 people. And then I copied the 5 people in the management chain locally and regionally in San Luis Obispo. And I got read receipts from everyone. You know what they did? Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. Because she turned around immediately and went to the airline and said, I'm being bullied by employees and this podcast is lies. You know, my husband is paying someone to tell these lies and I need protection and I need this job. If you work for, you know, a major airline, and they find out that you have access. Remember, she's got a security badge. She's got access to planes. Mm-hmm. She could walk on a plane if she wanted to and commandeer a plane. Not that she would, but if you knew you had an employee that had a mental health issue like she has, and you let her keep working at the airport because you're so afraid of her, because of the harassment suit. I'm the lesser of two evils. Right. Yeah. I don't even know what to say. Like it, you know, and I want to give you the name of the CEO and the airline. I want to kind of expose that, but I also don't want to open myself up. It's like one of the reasons I don't give her last name. I don't want to invite a big, especially with an airline. I don't want to invite a huge fight, but it's completely irresponsible of them.
Yeah.
Like for you to be the CEO of that airline and to find out that you've got an employee that's got a fake pilot's license. If she was a man, her ass would have been fired immediately. Immediately. The CEO would have said, find out, you know, get this to the regional manager. Someone go see her and get her out. We can't have that liability.
Yeah.
Imagine at this point, if she got pissed and she did damage to an aircraft somehow or took an aircraft because she's got credentials. Imagine what that would be like after this podcast has come out. By the way, we're two episodes into this podcast. I get a message from somebody who understands podcast analytics and charts and all that stuff. I'm in this podcast. I say, but we are in the top 10% worldwide after 2 weeks of being out. So that's tremendous liability for that airline. If she were to do something, you know, bad again, I don't know that she would, but you know, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, the story is certainly intriguing, and there, like I said, when I started out, I don't even know where to start because there are so many layers to this, but you mentioned she's still working for an airline and you mentioned, you don't mention her last name. When I started listening to the show, I thought, well, surely this person has been held accountable for certain things, but she's still out in the wild. Like she's still out there. Talk about not using her name to fully expose her and some other things you've done, I guess, to make those decisions about what to share and what not to share.
Sure. Yeah. I think initially for me, I had her last name in it. Initially, I was just like, I'm just telling my story. I don't care. And then, you know, what I didn't want to happen is I didn't want a bunch of keyboard warriors to start, you know, looking for her and to hassle her. This is my story to tell. I'm not looking for anyone to do any harm to her in any way. I just want my story told. So I wanted to eliminate that. But I realized as I've done it, you know, especially with the Instagram account, which is focused on her town, there are people that have posted her name on my Instagram posts, her last name. Sure. I've had to delete them. I have to monitor that account like crazy. But ultimately, it's going to come out. There'll be boards. There'll be, you know, there are crime podcast boards on Facebook and everywhere else. Her name will come out. It's amazing to me. You know, the people at the county that run the airport follow me. There are people at Child Protective Services. There's someone at the DA's office that's following me. I have a community of people that have picked this up because, you know, listen, part of it's a car crash. Let's be real, right?
Yeah.
Like this doesn't happen in our town. And now, not to steal Chris Lambert's, you know, because Chris Lambert did, you know, it, you know, in your own backyard or our own backyard, that podcast about Kristen Smart, not to steal his thunder, but this is happening in their backyard. And every, you know, people at the airport know, people at the, people on her staff, people on her team, and no one talks to her. She's lost the trust of her fellow employees and claims she's being bullied by exclusion. But we're in a day and age where we protect, you know, people that do this. Right. It's easy for her to say I'm a victim, even though she's ruined lives.
This is an obscure question, perhaps, but if in a year from now or 2 years from now, looking back, what do you hope to accomplish? Like, what's the overarching goal of this podcast? How will you measure its success outside of ratings and downloads and all that?
Funny, there's a story I want to tell you, and I don't know how to tell you. I was asked that same question by someone who I don't know. Someone said to me, "What's the end game in this?" And that someone was in a position maybe to do something, and I said, I want to expose her. I want my story told. I want her to stop. I want to share my story in any way that I can, and whether that's a book or, you know, some sort of, you know, visual medium, whether it be being able to get out and talk to people about what to do and how to recognize scams. I want to be an advocate and a voice for people. You know, I realized very quickly that I can use my voice for something really good with this story. And moving forward, even once the podcast is over, I could, you know, find shows like your show and go find me some scripts and let me do the podcast, and you guys can go talk about it after the fact, right? Yeah. Let me read it, right? Let me be the voice. You guys can go and we can do this. Like, we can team up and do this. And I thought the messenger is not just the message about Rachel's story, but it's potentially being a messenger for other stories for years down the road, for this, whatever the tale is. But this right now is a cautionary tale for people that think they're being scammed. If you think there's something wrong, dig into it. Take it from me.
Well, what can our listeners expect in the next few episodes of this season? Are we going to hear directly from other victims? Are there any other, what do you have planned that we need to look out for?
One thing I can tell you for sure, and I posted a little bit of this on social media, was that her daughter, the daughter formerly known as Madison, she and I spent an hour together. And that's going to come up at the very beginning of season two. Mm-hmm. And because of the depth of that interview and because of how much was there, and it's so emotional, I need to break it up into two episodes. I mean, the heartache, it's just going to anger people. Sure. You know what I mean? The heartache that this poor girl, imagine being 19 years old and never having a Christmas with grandparents on either side, never knowing family because you were lied to about, you know, who your family really was, in a sense, who they were personality wise. So, you know, her still husband, Mark, there's another guy she pulled the cancer scam on that I'm talking to. And there are people connected to her at work and in the community that know things that want to come talk. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, I also want to be responsible about it. Sure. But I'm going to have as many people that want to share their experiences that I can vet and know that they're not just doing it for malicious reasons. There's a part of me, I know it's going to sound crazy, but I, whether it be for journalistic standards or just otherwise, I need to protect her in a way, because I don't want people just out lying. I want to be able to verify what people say. I've got a responsibility. If you know, thousands of people end up watching or seeing this, I don't want to be the liar, right? Yeah. She's the liar, right? I want to be the guy that tells the truth and that vets people, but I will have as many people on as I can. I've got a relationship now with her sister. Rachel doesn't have a relationship with her sister because her sister has told the truth about her. Mm-hmm. Did you hear the line in the podcast that talks about Rachel's history of alleged sexual assault, where her sister Sherry said, in Rachel's mind, she's been raped 100 times.
Yes.
In her mind.
Hard to hear.
Like, yeah. When women that have been through sexual assault hear that, and that's just like the cancer folks. They're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Like, most women go through it once in their life. But for her to say it's happened repeatedly and the cancer's happened, like, she's sick. She needs help. You know, I don't know. It's parts of this, I'm still raw, honestly,
yeah.
as I write, I'm absolutely not done writing the story. So there's a part of me that still feels raw in a way by this.
And with these stories, yeah, we don't often get to hear directly from the victims of these scams. A lot of times it's somebody telling the story from a third person perspective. So I think that's what makes the show so strong, is your vulnerability and your obvious firsthand account of what's happening.
When I think I've said this at one point in one of the episodes, you know, sometimes when I close my eyes, I can hear Keith Morrison's voice narrating my story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can hear that, creepy voice.
Yes. Going,
you know, and then, you know, like, oh God, it's true. And I'm, you know, it's like what Billy said, you're the guy on Dateline that gets scammed. And yeah, it's true. But I there's a part of me that loves being able to tell my story now that it's out. You know, I respond to everyone that reaches out to me. I respond to all the posts on social media. I just, you know, I want people to buy in and to be cautious about what happens to them and to loved ones.
Well, when this comes out, I think 3 episodes of The Messenger will have been out, and I'm sure we're in for a wild ride, and we'll post links to the show in the show notes. But where on social media can our listeners find you to, sounds like, join in the conversation of what's happening instead of just being a listener?
Thank you for allowing me to do that. It's not even a shameless plug at this point. I'm just answering a question.
Yeah.
If you go to Instagram or TikTok or YouTube and just punch in the Rachel Cancer Scam,
okay,
you'll see it. You know, anyone at this point, anyone can go to Google and just punch in the Rachel Cancer Scam and you'll find it and join in and follow along. And this is the kind of thing. You're going to have to listen to those episodes more than once. There's just so much to digest in all of it. Even for me, as I listen to it and I go back to write, I have to go back to my text messages with her, which just infuriates me. And I go, oh my God, how am I going to work this into the story? How am I going to work that into, oh, she did this. Let me talk about this.
Yeah.
Like at some point someone's going to go, you're full of shit. None of this ever happened. This is, you're the liar, right? There is no Rachel.
But you've got receipts. No,
I do have, I like that you say that. I've got receipts for every single thing. I won't talk about it if I don't have a receipt.
Harry,
so I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
And your questions are thoughtful. If I had more time, I would have sent you all 12 episodes and you guys probably would have hunted me down and killed me because there's so much that you would have had to process. It would have been a week's long thing.
I think one a week is plenty to digest for the listeners out there.
Yeah,
so
right.
We'll definitely keep in touch, and this will be a story that we continue to track. And if the opportunity arises, we'd love to have you back on to kind of see, because I mean, this is active. Like, things can still happen. This isn't just you telling a historical event. So we'd love to keep in touch and keep you coming back.
I can tell you this before I go, my parting words to you, and I've been debating whether or not to even utter this. I stammered at one point about answering a question. I think this is a very active situation.
Yeah.
And I think that everything has not come out. And I think at some point things are going to get really complicated for Rachel.
Yeah.
And when that happens or before that happens, you know, you guys, and I appreciate this. This is the first, national podcast I've done. So you guys will have right of first refusal before I do anything.
Awesome.
Even Dateline, I'll reach out to you. So
now we've got that receipt for you.
Yeah. Cash that in.
Yeah.
But
absolutely. Absolutely.
You've been sitting here talking, and I think you just summarized kind of my feelings on this whole thing when you said that. We're from Kentucky. So I'm going to say something very Southern. You're about to set fire to a hornet's nest.
Yeah.
And it's about to get real. Like, so yeah, that's how I kind of, I think it's about to, the fit's about to hit the shan.
I love that. I love that expression. I use scorched earth a lot.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's true, right? You're literally going to light a match and just see what happens and see where those hornets go.
Yeah.
Because they're going all over the damn place.
And I've actually lit a hornet's nest, and I'll tell you, it gets a little crazy before it calms down.
Yeah.
So buckle up.
That's a real thing. People actually do that. That's another podcast. That's crazy.
Oh yeah. You got to get rid of them. Set them on fire.
We've got another podcast called Bless Their Hearts. We'll tell you more.
Don't you call a guy for that? Don't you get an exterminator, or you guys just pour some gasoline on it and buddy, light a match and go, what happened?
I got money for an exterminator.
We're from Kentucky. We're that guy.
You can call it. We'll come to Vegas and burn your hornets.
No. That's awesome. I appreciate you guys very much. I'd love to come back. I know I have more to say, and I realize that I've talked 90% of this. So I appreciate you giving me an audience to do that.
Nope. We'll
appreciate you.
We'll do it again. Thanks, Harry.
All right. Appreciate you guys.
Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast. distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.